Welcome to our pre-show, everyone, including our replay viewers. Stand by as we get our streams going, and we notify everyone that we're live. We hope that you'll share your feedback and comment throughout the show about the topics we talk about. I have Delaine Adams joining me now for our pre-show, our little informal show. And one of the things that we would love to set the record straight about is in unions, we're all about solidarity, one for all, yeah. All for one. And I know that we've been fighting for federal contract workers because they sit side by side with federal workers. Federal contract workers are federal workers, aren't they?
They are. They are. And again, this shutdown was not their fault. 35 days they had to endure. They had to dip into their savings. A study just came out, 26% of workers who suffered during the shutdown, 26% dipped into their savings, depleted their savings, took out loans and did other things that, again, they normally would not do if they were at work. But this shutdown created hardship for many members, including federal contract workers. So, you know, that's why our whole argument is that everyone deserves equal treatment, and federal employees and federal contract workers should get back pay. Federal employees are getting back pay, so contract workers should get back pay, too.
Right, because they're all federal workers.
They're all federal workers.
Just some happen to be under a contract.
Yes.
And when you're hired for a job, usually you're expecting to work that job. You don't expect somebody to say, oh, don't come to work today, and by the way, we can't pay you.
Yes, yeah. And usually when a lot of people took this type of job, they took it because it was a reliable job. You know, whether it's an industrial electrician down at Cape Canaveral or someone at the Johnson Space Center or some other site, you know, people decided to take these contracts because it was reliable. It was a reliable job. And so having to go through, three shutdowns in the past 12 months, I mean, it was unexpected. And, you know, it's we need to do the right thing. We hope our senators and Congress, congressmen and women do the right thing and support, including back pay in the long-term funding deal.
Okay, well, it is 3 o'clock, so Activate Live starts now.
Activate your voice.
Fight for your rights. Speak up.
Speak up.
We're union and we're proud.
Go union.
Live from Maryland, this is Activate Live.
Welcome to Activate Live, our weekly show about the Machinist Union, organized labor, and working people. I'm Tanya Hutchins, coming to you live from our headquarters in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Well, here's Delaine Adams now with the latest. Thanks for joining us, Delaine.
Thank you, Tanya. Glad to see you back.
Thank you. I'm sure you did a great job. I was on vacation, so I wasn't able to watch.
Yeah, we missed you. It was a short show, but we missed you. So, but Joe held it down.
I'm sure you did fine.
So, well, of course, the biggest news that's happening today is that there's an agreement in principle to avoid another government shutdown. But as viewers know, the biggest thing that we're really working on is to make sure that back pay funding is included in any long-term funding agreement. So so we're still asking people to call their senators and representatives and to see if they can include this in any long-term funding agreement. So we really appreciate people have sent letters, made phone calls, but we need to keep up the pressure. We should find out something probably today about what type of language is in this long-term funding agreement. So,
and we have to remind people that federal contract workers are federal workers. They're working side by side, aren't they?
Working side by side, and it wasn't their decision to give themselves 35 days off. So, and it's just like it wasn't their decision to have to dip into their savings, get behind on mortgage payments and other things as a result of this shutdown. So, we need to make the federal contract workers whole.
So, okay.
Yep.
What else you got?
Strike. 17 machinist union members at Flight Safety Services on McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita, Kansas, began a strike on February 12th. They provide quality air training for Air Force pilots, refuel boom operators, and maintain flight simulators for the Air Force's newest high-tech refuel aircraft, the KC-46 Pegasus, made by our members as well. So, You see them standing strong on the strike line. It's cold out there, but they're trying to make sure that there's some fairness in their contract. So,
and they're getting a lot of support on social media from union members and workers all across the United States and Canada.
They are, and I think, you know, that's what's different. You know, you can kind of see that in the past 2 years. There's been a lot of community support, too, for these type of actions. So really appreciate everybody in Wichita who's standing up for these 17 men and women.
All right. We have John Lett on the ground there who sent us some of these photos, so I'm sure we'll get more updates.
Yeah, you see Brother Blevins on the end there. So, yeah, it's good stuff. So hopefully we get a good outcome.
And we've had silent protests in the past, haven't we?
We have.
And today we had another one.
Yeah, a silent protest today. Again, it's really just centered around the shutdown and silent protest to protest them not having any more shutdowns, holding federal workers hostage. So you see members of AFGE, you see maybe a couple of NEFI members that are there. But yeah, it was a good action of solidarity. So
that was at the Hart Senate Office Building today?
Yes, Hart Senate Office Building today at noon. And I think they let out around 12:30. But again, it's just to make sure, keep the government open, and also not forget about all the stories we heard during this 35-day period. I mean, that's what we really need to work on going forward. We need to make sure that, hey, the shutdown happened, but now how can we continue to build power in the federal workspace? So,
and there are protests and meetings all across the country.
Yeah, there are, and I really have to say thank you to Ryan for sending us this information, Ryan Kelly, this federal government shutdown town hall meeting that's being held in Chicago. Should probably be one of the biggest meetings or day of action around the shutdown, and that's going to be February 15th in Chicago, two blocks west of Union Station there. And they're going to have great dialogue to discuss how do we avoid our federal workers being held hostage between elected officials in these discussions. So.
So if you're in the Chicagoland area, February 15th, yes, get out there at noon and show your support.
Yes, definitely. So still a lot of work to be done. And like I said, if there's anything that comes out soon, please stay tuned to Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever we need to put out about this shutdown. And hopefully we can get included in this long-term funding agreement.
Well, we thank you so much for keeping us up to date. We already have people showing their support on Twitter. And we have I Am District Lodge 70 saying thank you for your support of Local Lodge 708 members working for Flight Safety Services at McConnell Air Force Base. So,
yeah. Thank you, District 70, for all you do. So.
All right. Thank you, Delaine.
Thanks, Tanya.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Well, first off, we're going to take a look at this week in history. On February 12, 1818, abolitionist Frederick Douglass was born into slavery near Easton, Maryland, which is on the Eastern Shore. One of the most famous abolitionists, Frederick Douglass, so we pay tribute to him. Susan B. Anthony was born on February 15, 1820 in Adams, Massachusetts. She was a labor activist, suffragist, and abolitionist as well, who once said, "Join the union, girls, and together say equal pay for equal work." Well, the Machinist Union is celebrating Black History Month with a look back at some of the members who have made their marks in our labor movement. Roman Mayfield is a name you may have heard before. He was one of the first Black members of the Machinist Union. When he was hired at Boeing in 1946, people of color were not allowed to join the union. He still attended all meetings but couldn't participate in them. Well, Mayfield officially joined our union in 1950, and until his death, Roman worked tirelessly for the Boeing Company, his co-workers, and for the IAM. The 2000 Grand Lodge Convention named a scholarship in his honor. 95-year-old Ruth Waddell was the first Black employee to work at the General Electric plant in Bloomington, Illinois. She's a civil rights activist who received the city's Human Relations Award in 2000. Ruth and her husband were active in the Bloomington Normal Black History Project, which documents the black community in the 19th and 20th centuries. Now, we understand Ruth isn't feeling well, so we hope you feel better, Ruth. Everybody give Ruth a shout out to let her know how much we care about her. Well, the Machinists Union represents hundreds of thousands of workers in various sectors, whether it's transportation, healthcare, government and defense, just to name a few. Well, we develop and support apprenticeship and training programs across the United States and Canada. The goals are to increase job security, livable wages, and improved benefits for our members and future generations. Well, one new organization that seeks to involve young people in active community engagement is called Introducing Youth to American Infrastructure, or IYA. It's a nonprofit dedicated to building a 21st century workforce to sustain infrastructure. Well, joining us now is founder and CEO Beverly Scott. Thanks for joining us, Beverly.
Tanya, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Well, you have more than 30 years' experience in the public transportation industry. How inclusive is the industry now compared to when you first entered? Since we are now in the midst of Black History Month, I thought I'd ask you that first.
Tanya, you are so kind on to say 30, because I tell you, I feel like I'm knocking down 40 pretty soon. But it has changed a lot, okay? But we still have so much work to do. But I will tell you, I can't begin to tell you what it was like. I actually started in transportation back in 1977, and so I can't begin to tell you how lonely it was, okay, how isolated in many respects that you felt, particularly being a person of color and a woman, okay. There were a lot of barriers, and so things have improved, but once again, I say we have a long way to go. You go in most of our organizations, you go on shop floors and stuff, and you see whether it's maintenance, facilities, whatever, that you still see a lot of improvement that can take place. And you go in these boardrooms, okay, and in many management offices as well. And so I say this stuff is not difficult. You know what when you see it, okay, and everybody knows that we've got more work to be done.
Let me ask you
and
this.
And that's the reason for IYA. Mm-hmm.
Everyone has obstacles that they deal with on the job. When you think back to that time when you first entered the industry and you said that it was lonely, what was it that really got you through those moments?
Really great people, okay, and just great people that I was just absolutely so tremendously blessed to have. And these were people of all colors, not very many women back in those days to really talk about. I have to say, feel very much like a trailblazer in terms of being a woman in the industry. But I had, oh my God, I had people who would do things like, Bev, you really need to come and see. Get down here, understand what we're talking about with these trunnions and these A-frames and all of that. So I had just a lot of what I just call really good people who saw someone who was a young person who wanted to understand and know. And I tell you from the very beginning, having the sense, okay, to know to keep myself from just being in an office, but to actually get out and to get a real sense of what it is that we do on a day-to-day basis has honestly been the magic for me. I tell people all the time, I'm a bit of a charlatan. I have been in the world of public transportation for almost 40 years, but honestly, what I have been blessed to do is to be in the business of community building, okay? And that is literally the magic that every one of these infrastructure positions, manufacturing, transportation, electric sector, water sector, that's the magic that we bring to the table. And that's what I believe sincerely we need to begin positioning more so that certainly young people can begin to understand more about who we really are, okay? And so I'll just keep on preaching and won't stop. So you have to shut me up.
I want people to know that you do have a relationship and a past relationship with the IAM, because you've had a management role in dealing with the IAM. What was that relationship like?
Oh, it was, and you know what, always very, very professional. I've learned so much. We were laughing before the show. How many bargaining tables have I been in through the years? And, you know, just I've always, with IAM, and quite candidly with labor across the board, there's sometimes you're not going to agree, but you, when you come at things with the, you never do as people always agree on everything, but when you really have common goals and objectives, you can get there, okay? And so my relationship with IAM and quite candidly with organized labor across the board has always been a very, very good one. I'm not going to say the wimpy words like cordial. I'm going to say that I've always looked at it as a partnership, that we are all in here trying to get to the same objective, which is to be able to do the best that we can for the public that we're privileged to serve, and also for the people, the men and women who are the ones who are out there giving it their all, both them individually, but as well as their families, because these are, I mean, infrastructure is 24/7. It's not going off, okay, you know what I'm saying? And so when you make the commitment to let this be the way you walk in life, along with that comes a family and a support system that is walking with you. And so just a tremendous amount of respect and learned a lot too. You know, I tell people, you have to begin to understand things from the rooter to the tutor. So you're sitting out there listening, why are people arguing about something? You say, oh, now I understand what they meant. Okay, this is what's going on. You know, these particular positions are confusing, da da da. So you have to want to get sticky, okay? And that's kind of been one of my things through life, is that, you know, they talk about the person who meanders and walks around. Well, I like to understand if there is an issue, what it is, and let's try to see how we can work together to wind up resolving it. So very, very, very good relationship.
Okay, introducing youth to American infrastructure. Why did you create AYA?
Oh, I tell you, this thing, I asked myself that question. It's been in my spirit for almost 10 years, okay? And I tell you why I started it was, like I said, I've predominantly been public transportation through the years. I would come into places and we'd be having workforce shortages. And you know what's been happening in our world is that everything has been changing. Things like base closures and stuff have had major impacts on what used to be normal workforce feeds. When I was in school, we had things like shop and industrial laboratories and stuff. All of those, unfortunately, a lot of those were closed, okay? The young people didn't even have any kind of exposure. So you'd be sitting up here with these very highly specialized positions in track and maintenance and signals and operations control centers, and not having the pipelines that we used to have. So the way AYA got started, and then going and talking with young people, and for the most part, they either had a very distorted impression of what our careers would open for them, or no impression whatsoever. In fact, I have to take this in the public transportation sector, when we finally started realizing about 20 years ago that we probably had a major problem looming on workforce, we start having all these, the National Academy of Sciences going out doing surveys for us and all of this to find out the extent of our condition. So part of that was they went and talked to young people. So when they came back to do the report out to the Blue Ribbon Commission, when it came to young people, and I'll connect the dots in a minute, they said, oh, well, the good part is that they don't feel badly about you. But now here's the other side of it. They don't feel much about you at all, okay? And I've often said it like, I hope it's actually worse to be lukewarm. If love me or hate me, but feel strongly about me one way or another. So what I found was that this was a problem in terms of lack of job readiness and exposure and knowledge on the part of the next generation in public transportation, Now, which public transportation in and of itself, I've worked places where I've had 30 unions that have been part of my workforce, IAM, IBEW, ATU, TWU, you just name it, okay? So across the board, but finding, as I expanded, I serve on President Obama appointed me to a Presidential Commission on National Infrastructure Advisory Council, where we look at all 16 of the critical infrastructure sectors. And what I found was that the same problems that public transportation was experiencing were common to the electric sector, the water sector, the communication sector, the critical advanced manufacturing sector, same issues. Major retirements, burgeoning retirements, explosion of new technologies and different, just a completely different work environment. A major image problem when it comes to young people, because for the most part, pretty much like transportation, they either don't have us on the radar screen because they don't know about us, or what they think they know about us is a very distorted picture. Bottom line, us still not, and then of course, having some of the systemic underrepresentation issues that we have had. People of color, women across the board in every one of the sectors, okay? And so that's what led me to AYA. I actually looked to see whether there was already something that wasn't just about one sector. Because I said, this is crazy, because there are common, we all have a common foundation. Heavy science, technology, engineering, mathematics, now that's STEM. Now I like STEAM, I'm not trying to get funny here, but I like STEAM. That side, but I'm not gonna argue with the teachers, but it includes the arts, okay? And that's what the A is, okay? Arts and aesthetics. So all of them take that foundation, but what they also take are programs that, because we're gonna be continuously learning now, they take programs that are not just classroom, you have to wind up providing the partnerships and the career pathways that, and you guys have been doing it. I mean, honestly, and guys is a generic for me. You've been doing it. Labor is so much further ahead than what has been traditional management in terms of understanding how you have to bring together you have to bring the technical know-how, and you got to have the educational piece, but you must combine that with on-the-job training, exposure to both what is taking place, the equipment that is used, the real-life experiences, and how it's actually applied. That has to be part of the development to really wind up being able to get someone who is truly job-ready. You can't just do it out of just a classroom experience, and this takes partnerships and it takes collaboration. Beverly? With AYA, what you're saying is this, is that you don't have to be a one-trick pony, okay? We can be exposing young people to a broader world of infrastructure because foundationally, they're all the same. Now, you will choose to specialize as you go through your life, but in the very beginning, we can be talking about infrastructure. We can be exposing you to the fact that that could lead to water. It could lead to transportation. It could lead to power, electricity. Underpinning all of it, which is what I think is so great about IAM, is the advanced manufacturing piece. And the other thing I will say to you is, I don't care if what you as a young person wanted to do was to be a Latin, to be and say that your world of study was going to be Latin. Tech readiness. Okay, we cannot pour enough of it in. And God knows I'm a dinosaur, and I say, time you stop learning is when you're stupid. And I stay.
When you stop learning, it's time to leave that job.
It's time to leave. I tell people this all the time. There's a difference between ignorance and stupidity. Ignorance is a lack of experience and exposure. And I am working on trying to be tech ready every day. Okay. The young people are teaching me. Okay. Stupid, you can't help. That's a different thing for another.
Beverly, let's go through each sector one at a time. Which sector would you like to start with?
Well, I tell you what, whichever one you want to go ahead and bring up, I usually always go on. You know me.
We're a transportation union. So tell us a little bit about some of these challenges that the transportation sector deals with.
So what I wanted to do in each of these more is a takeaway, and I tried to give the citations because there's so much written stuff out there. But when we look at the transportation sector, is that it's just a problem, okay? I've said that when we've done our projections on it, that we will wind up needing, the needs that we have in terms of where the workforce is and what we're going to wind up needing over the next 10 years, it's just a gulf. It's like a chasm, okay? And in the world of training, we've had projections as much as like, my God, guys, you need training above and beyond everything that you're providing now. And the other thing that I really focus on is that most of our positions are frontline positions, okay? And this is one thing when you're talking with young people, with anybody, is that yes, we're like little cities. There are office positions. So, I mean, we have everything. We got doctors, we got nurses, we got lawyers, we got planners, we got this. But our frontline, the people that are actually the ones that are responsible directly for making sure that train moves, that bus operates, that whatever, that's the bulk of the positions in our sector. And that is where we must focus our effort, okay? In the transit side of the world, when you look at the workforce, our workforce is decidedly much older than when you look at the typical U.S. statistics, okay? When you look at the jobs that where we say these are the ones that are really going to be, that we're projecting out, are really going to have major demands, operators across all of our maintenance and facilities areas, I don't even need to tell you what's happening in terms of the explosion of new technologies. We going to all be learning for life, okay, you know what I'm saying? Because you can't hardly order one thing and it's got one set of stuff. If you order the same thing 2 years later, you could be assured that there have been major technological upgrades that have taken place. But those, and then you can see it, the projected annual openings are 68% larger than what we know ourselves for what we've got in pipelines currently are there ready to be able to try to fill these positions. So that's what transport looks like.
So does that mean that we don't have enough graduates going in to be able to fill these positions?
You got it. Okay. And then when I made the point about one of the things that transportation did, and I'm sure we're not unique, that's why there's a lot of, when I made an earlier point about base closures and stuff, there were many times that what wound up happening, and it kind of made us lazy on the recruitment, well, on the development side, because coming out of military, those were really people that came out that they had tremendous background. They got in the military, logistics, and those, well, as you began to get in certainly some markets, major base closures, those had been somewhat natural feeds in many respects into our transportation areas, particularly in the maintenance areas, facilities areas, logistics, material, inventory control, all of that. And so particularly in some markets, those closures really wound up having a real compounding effect for us, if you will, in terms of looking at that pipeline. But I'll say this, Tanya, the biggest thing that happened to us, and it's not just us, it's all of us. When we, I don't think we did, in the United States, it wasn't like, I think we went out intentionally, we were becoming affluent, all of that. And so when we made the shift of everybody go to college, we're going to become the thinking group, okay, not doing, okay. We close shop, industrial learning in the school. We basically downvalued apprenticeship programs. Psychologically, there became a thing that was like, well, we don't work with our hands, we work with our heads. Well, I can tell you one thing, it don't take a mental giant. You can think with your head all you want, but if you at the end of the day do not have the means to be able to produce what you are thinking of, you will never control it. Never control it, okay? And so there's a lot of stuff that has wound up happening to us that we're seeing the repercussions of now with all of the offshoring that we've done and all of that. People individually were in companies were making decisions that individually made sense for them. But when you step back and see what the collective impact has been on us as the United States, it's been devastating, okay? And so all I say about that, okay, we did it. But now we know better and we need to do better, okay? And so along with that, has to become this thing, and you see it coming back in new generations and stuff.
We see new apprenticeships coming back.
That's what I'm talking about, these new apprenticeship programs, and you see young people that really see a fulfillment. You see them out there. My son, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. I've lived typically East Coast, my big cities. My son has turned into Paul Bunyan. Okay, you know what I'm saying? He's got a garden. He and his family have garden. It's wonderful. He didn't get it. He did not get it from me. The point I'm saying is that this whole, it's a change as well that we're taking in terms of we've got an opportunity to be able to help think and redo some of this stuff so that we don't say, well, working with your hands, that's below me. Okay, you know what I'm saying? This psychologically, we just need to do a lot of readjusting, if you will. So I say that it's and the other thing I think that is critical for these careers, which is behind me with AYA, because AYA has a plus in it.
Yes, what does that plus stand for?
Let me tell you what that Introducing Youth to American Infrastructure Plus is. I want the young people that have an opportunity to be part of an AYA experience. And AYA doesn't have any particular magic sauce. You're really, communities are doing it themselves. We're helping to bring tools and perspectives and help you to be able to kind of bring this thinking to it. But the plus is around this. It is around values and outcomes. So I want the young people to be the smartest ones in science and technology and bring arts and digital this and all of that to the table. But if we say that a green economy, sustainability, resilience, inclusivity, equity, civic participation are important, then we have to bring these things live into the classroom. People, not only do they not teach cursive in many places anymore, they don't teach civics and government, okay? So when we talk about civic participation and being a part and how you can be a part of your community, voting, things like that. Why is it important to be a part of decision-making? Where do you get that? Do you have to wind up having something horrifying happen in your neighborhood before you say, democracy, it ain't free. I got to work it. So one of the key parts of AYA is that I not only want the young people to be smart, understand, not be fearful of science, technology, and you can do it in an exciting, interactive way. But at the base of it, I want them also to wind up getting infused, mentoring, exposures to all of these things. If we say these things are important, then they need to be a part of the actual classroom experiences. So I'm not talking about just the typical classroom. I want young people that are involved, and this is not just YAYA. There are programs that are, most of this in Peace with AYA is connecting dots. One of my frustrations as I've worked in 9 places in markets across the country is that there were always good programs in local areas. My frustration was that they were not connected. So I'd have a wonderful program going here in New York. They were doing great things. I moved to an Atlanta, you get somebody who's got a great idea. They're not even aware that 40 other places, there are people who have been working on some of these things. You don't have to go recreate an electromechanical technical from scratch. You don't have to wind up doing this. You could talk to these people. You could network. You will customize as you see fit for your particular situation and market, but understand the fact that there are others that are out there and you can learn, develop it, together. So that's in its first instance, really, AYA is very much a network, okay? And like I say, that there are many good examples all over the place. The frustration is that within our sectors, we're very siloed, and across the sectors, we're very siloed. So
who are the young people? Who are the young people that you are really trying to target?
So the primary focus, I love young people across the board, but I'm real clear, okay? Folks who have been underrepresented in these careers is my target, okay? And so this is largely young people of color, low income, and women across the board, okay? these have been those who have typically been underrepresented across the sectors. And every single one, this is not Bev just picking out and being inflammatory or whatever. I just keep it real, okay? And every single one of the sectors themselves know quite candidly that we have a major gender gap. And we have to not just, and there's been a lot of progress, but there's a lot more progress that needs to be done. And that is from the boardroom to the C-suite to the floor and the shop and everywhere in between. Okay. And so that's one piece of it. And then many, many, many places. Okay. Underrepresentation in terms of people of color. And a lot of that. And, you know, let's face it, labor, like we say, we all know better. We got to do better, okay? Labor has had its challenges through these through the years in these areas, too. Been a lot of major, major changes that have taken place. But we got to make sure that we open up and that we make things as inclusive as possible for everybody. And that, when we lift the key to American competitiveness, is that when we can honestly say that we have achieved shared prosperity, I got no problem with understanding that there are going to be some people at the top of the hill. But everybody is supposed to be able to go up that hill and be on the hill. Right now, that is not the condition, okay? And so that's the focus. And I say that it's very intentional I said in the beginning, I have been blessed to be in the business of community building.
Well, when Beverly, we have a large community and we want to give you a chance. What is your advice for workers and organizations that want to support your work?
What I would tell you is one, come just all you have to do is just contact us and we're going to put all the WWWs up. And all you have to do is contact us. It costs nothing to be a part of the network, okay? And working together, if there's anything that we can do that just simply helps you to connect with something that you're already working on, or you say, look, you know what? We want to be able to share with other people. That is a very first step for us, is what we're interested in having happen. So if you have an interest, And you say, look, well, we're already doing X, Y, Z in our community, and we'd like to be able, we want people to know about it. Or conversely, you say, well, look, you know, we've been trying to come up with whatever, whatever. Do you have any ideas? Are you aware of anybody that could wind up being helpful? Then we'd like to be able to have that dialogue coming back and forth. So like I say, at the very beginning, just being part of the network and being part of sharing what you're doing or what your interests are is where we start, and then we take it from there. So that's what it is. And this,
thank you.
And it's just you know, I've been so tremendously blessed through the years that to have been in the transportation field and to have the opportunity to see what a difference. Just close your eyes for a minute and think about, if we did not have manufacturing, if we did not have the water sector, if we didn't have transportation, if we didn't have the power sector, what would the world look like? And so what we're trying to do to young people is reposition how they think, because this, when you think of it that way, you say, my God, I can be involved in careers that wind up making I can make a difference. I can decide where that street goes. I can decide where that curb cut goes. I can decide where that power line is. I can decide in terms of the quality of the water that we have. When you make it that, they can think that way, then it changes the interest in why I would want to be a part of these careers to begin with. Okay. And that, I say, is the magic at the end of the day that we want to wind up bringing into neighborhoods and into classrooms.
Well, Beverly, one last question. You're a board member of the Transportation Learning Center, and the IAM is involved in that as well. Can you just briefly tell us what that entails for you?
What that is I'm one of the founding board members, and 15 is, Transportation Learning Center is now 16 years old. Okay. And it is the only transportation labor management consortium on training in the country, okay? I have been honored to be able to sit at the table during my active time as a board member, and now I'm a senior advisor with the center, and we work in every single area of transportation on skills building, and have really wound up with tremendous, and this is labor and management together. That is our motto, is that, we have done a new curriculum on signals, on elevator escalators, all of this done absolutely labor top leaders as well as management top leaders have sat at the table, because if there is anything that we can be aligned on, it is the importance and the criticality of our workforce. And when we say that our people are our greatest resource, for me, TLC has been one of those that actually demonstrates it, because we put the that's our absolute focus. And if I could say one other piece, and what we must do, because I is about advocacy as well, we want and must have increased transportation and infrastructure investment, but that investment cannot just be in bricks and mortar and things. We have to push heavily that anything that moves must in fact wind up providing for not yaya talking, but real investment in training, retraining, and education for our workforce. Because at the end of the day, you take care of the people and they will take care of the products and the services. And that is not going to happen by just talking about it. I'll say this, transportation sector, we only put about 1% of our total expenditure into training and development. That's in this country. You look at some other countries like France, 7%. You look at India and China, and it's bordering on double digit. So for us as a country, we have to and we must. Nothing needs to move on infrastructure substantively without having funding in there that is supporting training, retraining, and education. And it will be continuous education through in the 21st century workforce. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, thank you, Beverly. We are so thankful that our leaders, our international president, Bob Martinez, and also our Safety and Health and Apprenticeships Director, Jim Reed, have introduced us to you. So we really appreciate you taking out the time today to talk to us about all of the sectors, including transportation.
Thank you so much. It's been just an honor. Thank you.
And if you would like more information on introducing youth to American infrastructure, just visit the website IYAI.org. That's IYAI.org. And you can join the conversation as well. So let us know what you think about the future of infrastructure and job prospects for the next generation of workers by commenting on this video. We have people commenting already. We have the members of Local Lodge 1725 saying solidarity to all our brothers and sisters. So thank you for that comment. Zita Hildebrand saying snowy greetings from Local 2797. Thank you, Zita. Stay safe in that snow. Union Labor News is saying the best weekly labor show. Machinists, keep up the good program stories. We always enjoy watching. Thank you so much, Union Labor News. You're putting out some good news there as well, and we thank you for sharing it. Rosie Machinist 751 saying love her passion. Yes, Dr. Lee Beverly Scott is very passionate. We love that about her too. You need that passion to get more apprenticeships and training programs out there, so we're glad that she's fighting for it. Dave Lehive saying great information. Thank you, sister. So you're getting a lot of support out there, Dr. Beverly Scott. Just go to the website for Introducing Youth to American Infrastructure for more information. We also like to hear from you watching at home. Even if you're watching during the replay, you can still comment. Well, here is what is happening ahead on the Machinist Union's calendar of events. So grab a pen or pencil if you need to. You look at our registrations that are due. They're due March 8th for the Basic Communicators class at the William Whippesinger Education and Technology Center. IAM members have until March 11th, which is my birthday, by the way, to sign up for the Retirees Education and Strategy and the Young Workers Strategy. For more information, visit the website, wimpesinger.iamaw.org. As far as our meetings that are coming up, upcoming state council meetings include the Indiana meeting in Indianapolis starting February 19th. Illinois' meeting starts the next day, February 20th, in Springfield, along with New Mexico, which meets in Santa Fe. Nebraska's meeting is February 24th in Lincoln. The Georgia State Council of Machinists wraps up its meeting today. General Secretary Treasurer Doris Cervantes and General Vice President Ricky Wallace both spoke at that meeting. And you still have time to submit your pictures of IAM members in the workplace, at a union function, or performing community service for a chance to win a cash prize and have your photo featured in the 2020 IAM calendar. The entry deadline is April 1st, which is also the deadline for the newsletter and website contest, so get those entries in as soon as you can. The Women's Conference is coming up April 3rd to the 6th in Las Vegas, Nevada. The theme is Women Rising, Unite the Fight. That's at Bally's, so you still have time to get in there. That'll be quite a conference that we're looking forward to. As far as our special events calendar goes, the Transportation Conference is April 8th to 11th, also in Vegas. And the Legislative Conference meets May 6th to the 8th here in the nation's capital, and we have members coming from all over the country. Communications Conference is happening in Vegas in June. That's June 4th to the 6th at Planet Hollywood, where you learn how to activate your voice. That's the first Communications Conference a few years ago. We came up with this theme of voice activation, and that's why we named this show Activate Live, because we want people to activate their voices. So those are all of the events that you can look forward to. You can always sign up for iMail, which is our twice-weekly iMail newsletter that you get in your news inbox, and you can get the latest news and updates there. So we had a lot for you today. We hope you enjoyed it. That is it for this episode of Activate Live. Next Wednesday, we'll have an update on back pay for federal contract workers. We'll also speak with Chris Garlock of the Metro Washington Labor Council about labor film festivals. They happen all over the country. We'd like to tell you about them, starting with the one in Washington, D.C., but we'll mention others as well because they do happen globally. So join us again Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on this same social media platform.